So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Okay, I'm not much of a conspiracy theorist, but if you hear me banging around in here, it's because I just dumped a cup of water all over my computer, all over my desk, on every important document, and guess what I dumped water on? That's right, my voter ballot. As if there isn't enough controversy already present about voter ballots. I don't know what's happening. The devil's in the details today. I have documents spread everywhere from my desk. A human moment. We shall pause, acknowledge that the computer is not working, and move on and be so grateful for all the technology that we ridiculously have at our fingertips. I have my iPhone, my computer, and my iPad all within hand's reach, so we're good. And it's the feast day of St. John Paul the Great, an incredible patron in my life, someone who has informed me and formed me in an incredible way. In fact, coming up today, I have quite a number of surprises for you, one of which is that our very own executive director, Father Rocky, will join me. Now, this is a real treat today because if you didn't know, he was actually ordained by St. John Paul II, whose feast day we celebrate today. We're going to be walking through some of the 12 rules for marriage insurance. Father Rocky wrote a book called Marriage Insurance, 12 Rules to Live By. And these are gems, especially in light of the feast day of St. John Paul the Great and the many things he had to say about the human person, some of the greatest desires that are on our hearts, who we are, what we're looking forward to. Talk about fidelity to the teaching of the church on some of the most difficult issues of our time. And I think of it so many ways as summarized in his work titled Theology of the Body. If you want to know what St. John Paul II thought, you have to start by understanding the backbone of Theology of the Body. And it's this idea that you're made to be a gift. Everything we have has been given to us by God the Father, and everything shall then be given back. Through the communion of persons, how we interact with each other in our friendships, marriages, vocations to religious life. It's quite an incredible teaching, and we're going to unpack some of that theology of the body today during the show. We'll talk about some of those key principles where he talks about why it's good that there's a complementarity between men and women. Why the very meaning, the spousal meaning of the body is actually written into who we are. We'll talk about solitude and so much more. I'm excited to dive in, but I want to start here. The journey of so many people today leaves them in this state of solitude that can become rather resentful. And the message of John Paul the Great is that we're supposed to go from a place ultimately of solitude to gratitude. That's all giving. We find this meaning behind who we are in becoming a gift. In fact, if we were to look to what inspired St. John Paul II in his teaching, it was really some of the great words written during Vatican II, Gaudium et Spes, one of the documents that came out of Vatican II. Now, whatever you may think about Vatican II, I'm not going there. This is one beautiful line that we can all look at. Talking about the likeness, the image and likeness that the human person is made in. The image and likeness of God. It says, this likeness reveals that man, who is the only creature on earth, which God willed for himself, can't fully find himself except for a sincere gift of self. This is what fuels St. John Paul II's theology of the body that is so relevant to marriages today that are difficult. We're in just the drudgery of it at times, and we forget that it's supposed to be a great joy. Someone who understood that his life was a gift and really sought to give it back to the world was St. John Paul II. We're going to unpack more of the theology of the body coming up here, but I'd like to start by sharing with you an incredible, incredible gift we have in the 21st century. And that is the fact that we actually have the recorded voices of saints. Saints who have gone before us, but who have lived in modern times. Now, this is actually St. John Paul II back in 1982. He was in the Cathedral at St. Peter's, and he was celebrating Mass. Listen to this. Ooh, we'll have that in just a moment. There seems to be a problem with the audio. We'll talk about this. You'll hear it in a minute. Just wait. It's going to be a total treat. You will love it. Are we ready? Do we have it? We've got it. Here you go.
Let us pray. Let us sing. Pater Noster, Latina.
Our Father in Latin.
Pater Noster, qui es in celis, sanctificetur nomen tuum. Adia regnum tuum, fiat voluntas tua, sicut in cielo et in terra. Panem nostrum quotidianum da nobis hodie, et dimitte nobis debita nostra, sicut et nos dimittimus debitoribus nostris, et ne nos inducas in tentationem, sed libera nos
That was St. John Paul II in 1982 at St. Peter's, and during Mass, inviting those in attendance to sing with him the Our Father, the Pater Noster in Latin. I look at this man, and why is it that so many people have such a deep, found admiration for him? Even people who aren't even Catholic mourned when St. John Paul II died in the early 2000s. John Paul II talks about how we must rediscover the lost fullness of humanity and that we should desire to regain it. We've lost much of this understanding of becoming that gift of self, of seeing that my life isn't about me. We live in a culture that's so focused on me time, pampering yourself, that we've created isolation even within marriages. You're listening to Trending today during our marriage hour here on Relevant Radio. And I thought it was appropriate today to invite my guest, who is the executive director of Relevant Radio, Father Rocky, who was actually ordained by St. John Paul II. You can see a picture of it on my Instagram now if you head over to Timory. And we see a young Father Rocky here who, again, was ordained by GP2. Father Rocky, what was that like?
Well, he still is a young Father Rocky. It's just that the color of his hair has changed. How about that? How did you get that picture?
I found it on the Relevant Radio website.
Oh, no. Oh, my goodness. Nothing is private. Hey, great. It's great to be on your show. How do you like your show?
I love it. As long as I don't spill water on my computer as we're starting.
Oh, I did that once. I spilled coffee on my computer. That's a sad day when you do that. But no, I was lucky. I was in the right place at the right time. So I went to the Seminary of Opus Dei in Rome. And for 10 years straight, Pope John Paul would ordain men of Opus Dei to the priesthood, and not just us, but you know, he'd ordain, I don't know, 50 or 60 people each year around Trinity Sunday. It was on Trinity Sunday, and usually at that time there'd be 30 or 40 of us in Opus Dei who did that. And the reason he was doing that is because our prelate, the head of Opus Dei, wasn't a bishop yet, And once he made him a bishop, then he could do the ordinations himself. So I was in that last class. There were 10 years running from 82 to 92, and there were three Americans ordained that day as priest for Opus Dei. Myself, Father Bob Gall, is a professor at our university in Rome, Pontifical University of the Holy Cross, and Father Steve Brock, who's teaching at the University of Chicago. So lucky me, right?
Mm-hmm. Now, what's it like for you looking back at that photo and remembering you were actually ordained by a saint?
I was ordained by a saint as a priest, and I was ordained by a blessed as a deacon. That was the prelate of Opus Dei, because he had just become a bishop. I was in that, like, one-year time where our prelate was a bishop. So on Judgment Day, I'm going to have a lot of explaining to do. The Lord's going to say, wait a second. You were ordained by a saint and ordained a deacon as a blessed. What are you doing here? I'll have a lot of explaining to do. But it was a great day. You know, my parents came, if any family members came, friends came. It was a glorious, sunshiny day. And, you know, it doesn't get better than that, being in St. Peter's Square and being in St. Peter's Basilica and being ordained as a pope. I remember as a kid, we had a family Bible in the living room, I think in the bookshelf. And I knew it was a treasured book because it was a big book, right, a big version of the Bible with pictures in it. And you could write names in it of when people got baptized and when they got married. It was like a family record book. Because there was a time in the church, I think in the 50s, where they're really promoting the family Bible. And it was a very nice item, you know, covered with red leather embossed in gold. And I would page through these things and see a picture of the Baldacchino, Bernini's Baldacchino in St. Peter's Basilica. And you see the Swiss Guard in their colorful outfits. And it really stuck in my imagination. Never did I think I would be so fortunate as to be actually ordained as a priest. I wasn't thinking of being a priest as a kid, you know. That's something that came along later, gradually. Mm-hmm. But what a great man John Paul was. I remember the day he was elected, because this is in 1978, and John Paul I had only lived for 30 days. It was, like, shocking. You know, that was the year of three popes.
Three
Paul
popes
VI, John Paul I, and this is before you were born, right? Yes. John Paul II, John Paul I, and Paul VI. This is 1978, and the mood in America at that time was there was a lack of confidence in America, and there was a lack of confidence in the church. Because of, I would say, poor execution of Vatican II, there was a great deal of identity crisis in the church. And this led to defection of many priests from the priesthood and nuns from religious orders. So there was kind of an inferiority complex or lack of confidence in the church itself. And at the same time in American culture, this is right after Vietnam War. I think this is the time of the Iran-Contra hostage, and like we couldn't do anything right. And John Paul II stepped on the scene, and he was young, he was handsome, he was athletic, he was confident, he could speak a billion languages. And quickly we recognized this man as quite unique, courageous, right? And I think that's why a lot of people were attracted to him. He was courageous. You know, they tried to shoot and kill him, and he got well, and he went back at it again. He would step right into danger. Not in a provocative way, but he really lived the words he said. He said, do not be afraid. Those were his first words when he was elected as Pope in 1978, and he lived those. So he was a man who was courageous. He was committed. He was dedicated. He was confident. He was prudent, and he didn't talk too much. I remember, and that sometimes is a very good trait in a leader. They don't talk too much. I remember being at World Youth Day with him in Paris in 1997. Again, I think that's before you were born. And there were a million people there waiting for him on Saturday evening. And he came in his Pope mobile. Everybody knew he was ailing. Parkinson's had already started upon him. I think he had a cold. He might have even had the flu. And people are cheering, going crazy. And he finally gets up to the stage, and he sits down, and he says one word, and the crowd just goes wild. I'm going, this is amazing. He said one word, and he's got everybody hanging on every syllable that he's about to say. And of course, he was courageous in proclaiming the truth, and he was innovative in taking the church out of the Vatican and into the world, hopping on jets, going out to meet people, doing new things, meeting in a soccer stadium in Morocco with Muslim youth, and they were as excited about him as the Catholic youth were. He was really quite amazing. Of course, his pontificate, how do you measure it?
You know, he's willing to give himself not just to the Catholics.
No, he'd give himself to everybody,
people,
right?
Yeah,
he set new standards there, preaching and visiting mosques and synagogues and Lutheran churches, always wanting to go to Russia, always wanting to go to China, but no pope has been able to do that yet. So shame on Russia and shame on China. The only reason they would say no is they're afraid. They're afraid of the truth, right? Mm-hmm. And we pray for the day when their minds and hearts are opened. So, today's his feast day because it was on this day that he was installed he initiated his pontificate on October 22nd, 1978.
That's Father Rocky, our executive director here at Relevant Radio. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray during our marriage hour. Let's unpack some of your book, Father Rocky.
You
wrote a book titled, yes, Marriage Insurance, although it's away from my wet pile. It's a little spread out here.
Good.
And you give 12 rules to live by. Mm-hmm. Now, let's go through a handful of those. I want to go through the fourth and fifth rule that really relate to each other, going out on a weekly date as a married couple and also taking a yearly vacation without the kids. Break down why this is so important.
Okay, so a little bit of history of this book. I've done a lot of weddings over the years, and the dedication page is to my nephews and nieces whose weddings I presided at. And my homily is almost always the same at a wedding. And I've learned from others. I've learned from my parents. I've learned from people who've had successful marriages. And so I put this all in a book. So if you look at those 12 rules to live by, what they all have in common is about communication. People drift apart unless they actively work on communication. That happens in marriages. It happens in business. It happens in religious orders. It happens in any kind of organization. You actively have to work on communicating and being with people. And the idea of insurance is real simple. If you've got something valuable, let's say a house, a car, your life, you take out an insurance policy on it. And if something happens, the insurance company pays you to make you whole again. Right, same thing here. Your marriage is important. Take out an insurance package. If something happens, we'll make you whole. You know, you pay me $1,000 and it goes bad, I'll pay you $1 million if you follow these 12 rules. Because I'm sure if you follow these 12 rules, one in a million marriages will break up. I'm absolutely convinced of that. So the thing about go out on a weekly date. Now, I observe this from my parents. I'm the youngest of 8 kids. And as a kid, they would always go out on a Saturday night. And it was exciting for us because we got to stay home. You know, Dad would make us spaghetti and, we'd get popcorn, watch movies or things like that. And they dress up. Now, back then, people did dress up, right? They dress up. I mean, my dad looked like Clark Gable. My mother looked like Elizabeth Taylor. She had those long white gloves on. She smoked cigarettes. He smoked a cigar. It's like right out of the movies, right?
He wore a suit, too.
He wore a suit.
How proud you were of them before they left.
And we got to shine his shoes and all that. We weren't wealthy, but they had class, right? And they'd always go to the same restaurant on the corner of Route 60 and 45 in Mundelein, Illinois, called Tarney's Restaurant. They'd all come back with a doggy bag, which we loved. And I suppose they'd have their martini and they'd be out, right? It was Saturday night. They're going out. And it was their night out. And they'd give us just one piece of advice before they left. They would say, "We'll be back in 3 hours. Don't burn the house down." And we're thinking, is that it? Just don't burn the house down? Like, man, you can do a lot and have a blast without burning the house down. But what we learned there, and they didn't have to say it with words, that their relationship was the most important thing. And then came the kids. And then came the other things, right? But in their vocabulary, mom and dad was first. Now, I realize a lot of young families who are married who have little kids – they can't do that because they can't get babysitters or things like that. But when you can do it, it's very, very important. Look for ways to do that. In-laws should volunteer. Hey, let's take the kids on Saturday night so you two can go out and have a date. And many times when I've dealt with people who are having problems with their marriage, I'll ask them, when was the last time you two went out to dinner by yourselves? And they'll say, it's been years. I said, man, that's a problem. That's a big problem. Just because you're married doesn't mean you stop dating. Just because you're married doesn't mean you stop courting each other. Just because you're married doesn't mean you stop taking good care of yourself to make yourself attractive to the others. And I remember, it comes to my mind now, when I was in high school, I was in a jazz band at the local junior college, and we're going to have a concert that Saturday. And I asked the band director, how should we dress up for this? He said, dress up like you're going on your first date with a girl you like. You know, if it's important to you, you know, you need to take care of yourself.
That's Father Rocky here on Trending with Tim Ray. We'll come back talking about perhaps you're a seasoned married couple and you're not really feeling comfortable about the idea of going on a weekly date or even a vacation. We'll talk about that coming right back here on Trending.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Okay, I think I'm semi-recovered. The computer's not turning on. My thank you cards from the baby shower are soaking wet, along with many other important things. But I'm here. It's live radio, and joining me today during our marriage hour is Father Rocky, the executive director of Relevant Radio. We were talking just a minute ago about how he was ordained by St. John Paul II back in 1992. There's a photo on my Instagram that I dug up if you'd like to see it. And we've been discussing his book, Marriage Insurance, 12 Rules to Live By. And we're talking about going on that weekly date or yearly vacation without the kids. Now, Father Rocky, there's a lot of discomfort and resentment for many spouses after years of marriage. How can this be overcome to start bringing those rules back into their marriage?
Well, sometimes that's hard to get into new rhythms and new customs when you haven't done that for a long time, right? So that's why I recommend people start reading this book at an early age, well before they get married, right? And well before they start living together. So as soon as a boy likes a girl, girl likes a boy, you know, 14, 15 years old, I think it's good to read this so you plan for the future. But let's say you're down that line, you've been married and all the rest, and you're staying married, but, oh my goodness, you know, they don't seem like they really like each other or they love each other. All right, well, that happens at times too. I don't know if you remember the movie Fiddler on the Roof. Did you ever see that?
Yes, it's been a while, though.
Okay, so great movie. So, you know, the kids have moved out. It's an empty nest. The husband and wife are sitting around the kitchen table. And the husband asks his wife, Goldie, do you love me? And she's like really uncomfortable with that question. You know, they've been married 30 years now. They're not as young as they used to be. They're not as trim and as fit as they used to be. And she tries to change the subject. But he persists. He said, do you love me? So she puts down her knitting and she says, for 25 years, I've cooked for you. For 25 years, I've cleaned for you. If that isn't love, what is? Now, of course, it breaks into a song. It's a musical. I'm not going to sing the song. But it's a great point. What is love? Love is deeds. Love is deeds of service, right?
It's an action.
It's an action. It's a commitment. It's a choice. And it doesn't mean that, you know, the honeymoon doesn't last forever, right? And that's where you grow in humility. You grow in holiness. But how I rejoice when I see married couples who are together. And they're holding hands, and you see that after 50, 60 years of marriage. That's a great, great thing. And love also in a married relationship means to be willing to forgive, to understand there's only one person who will not let you down. That's Jesus Christ. The only person who will not let you down is Jesus Christ because he's the only perfect one. Our Lady, too, right? But human beings, they're flawed. They're going to let you down. And we have to forgive because it's worth it holding on to that relationship. It's worth it to fight for that loyalty. It's worth it. And everybody then can grow in empathy and humility and mercy, and that strengthens the relationship. But, you know, getting back to the book, if you can, take some time off every year, just the two of you, to get away for 3 days or send the kids away for 3 days. It's a staycation for you, and they go away for 3 days so that you can get to know each other again and spend that time. I was counseling a couple some time ago, really, really, really good people, very, very generous people, 8 children. You can imagine the demands that makes on you, especially if you're trying to send them to private Catholic schools and all that. But they were having a very difficult time and said, you know what? You guys need a vacation. no, we're way too busy. We don't have the money. And I said, look, I'm gonna see what I can do to help you figure this out. You guys need a week off just by yourself. And they were able to do that. And they said it was the best thing that they ever did. It was the best thing. They laughed. They went out to Burger King. Right?
It doesn't have to be an expensive vacation.
It doesn't have to be expensive.
Nor does the date. It could be a picnic.
That's right.
It can be a movie, as you say in your book as well. That resentment can kind of really build when there's a lack of intentionality. That you said love is an action, it's a deed, which is so important. Mm-hmm. And so it's getting back to that comfort zone of being candid in marriage and being open. A lot of your rules center around this candidness within marriage.
Communication.
Yes. And this honesty. So let's talk a little bit about that weekly business meeting, but then also never saying mine and how the two relate to each other.
Okay, so the weekly business meeting, I learned this from married people in Akron, Ohio. I went to St. Mary's Parish there, and they're all involved in a charismatic community. So you've heard in the news, Judge Amy Coney Barrett belongs to this People of Praise community. Well, there's a half dozen of these charismatic communities around the country, and this one was called Bread of Life. And I was super impressed by these people. They had almost no divorces among the married couples in their community. And they would adopt children of special needs and interracially. I mean, it was just very, very edifying. And I realized that they had kind of a rule in their community that Saturday mornings or one day a week, the husband and wife would go out, maybe to McDonald's, to get an Egg McMuffin and a cup of coffee, and they'd bring their yellow legal pad and a ballpoint pen and have a business meeting. They'd communicate, all right, the budget for the house, the calendar for the family, the activities for the kids, all of that kind of stuff. Because when you're married and you have kids and you got a house, that's like a little small business you're running there, and you got to communicate. You got to work together. And that's hugely important for keeping people together on the same team. It's a common project. And so whenever I officiated a wedding, I always congratulated the parents of the bride and groom. I said, I really want to congratulate you because your children getting married today are saying they want to imitate you. They want to have a family. They want to have a house. They want to have kids. They want to have a dog, right? They want the joy that they've seen growing up in your family.
That's Father Rocky here on Relevant Radio. We're talking about the joy of having that family and being connected. And with that, we're also talking about stepping outside of your comfort zone. And when we talk about stepping outside of your comfort zone, we talk also about things such as rule number 8, never say mine.
That's a 4-letter word.
Never say mine, right? That 4-letter word. So let's talk about this. We often speak of this one flesh union, and people talk a lot about the complementarity of the body. Mm-hmm. But one flesh union means a union of persons, not just physical intimacy. And so this comes down to time, money, and so much more.
Sure,
also
sure,
getting
sure,
away
sure.
from this theme of me time that is so prevalent in the culture.
It is. It is. And again, these aren't hard and fast rules, so everybody's got to figure it out on their own. And if you only just work on one, it's going to help you. But that's what marriage is, right? The two shall become one flesh, and there it is. So what we don't say is, you know, that's my side of the garage, or those are my leftovers in the refrigerator, or it's my time, my life, my career, my money, right? And I think it's great when I send emails to people and they're married and the email goes to both of them. Right, so it might be joeandmary@hotmail.com. Now, some married couple says, no, I don't want to know what she's getting. Or, I don't know what he's getting. Right, but when you live in that kind of transparency, it keeps people together because there aren't secrets. Same thing with money and checking accounts. I think it's very important there that they know what's going on because that can be a real source of divisiveness in a marriage is the money issue, right? And so to the degree you can do that. I think vacation should be together. Now, there can be exceptions too, right? But, you know, we have to have that in mind, right?
Absolutely, that response and keeping in mind one another and letting go of anything that could be building up. And I think this comes to that 10th rule you have, Father, of going to monthly confession and how important that is for forgiveness before God, but also granting forgiveness to your spouse and asking for it as well.
Well, we need grace, and the great source of grace are the sacraments, the Holy Eucharist and the Sacrament of Confession, which we can receive frequently. We can go to communion every day, maybe not in COVID circumstances, but normally that helps us. We can go to confession whenever we want, whenever we need. I think you got to go at least monthly to stay in the game. If you want to become holy, go every 2 weeks. If you want to be a saint, go every week. And you develop a finesse of soul and be able to grow in charity and all that. Because marriage many times is requires saying, you know what, I was wrong, I'm sorry, it's my fault, please forgive me. And that can be hard to say, but if we don't get there, you know, our pride will get the best of us. So I can't recommend it enough, those means that the church has given us and which have always been recommended.
And it can be so helpful. I think the question that came in yesterday during the show of, you know, I think that my significant other might still be looking at pornography and I don't know how to approach this. Well, if you're dating or engaged or married, setting that monthly confession as a goal within that relationship early on is a good way to be candid with one another and to be able to address some of those faults before God and before one another as it comes up, because there are struggles that will arise.
Right. It's 95% of conquering those sins are to be able to take ownership of and said, I did this. I'm sorry. I was wrong. Now, unfortunately, because we're all affected by original sin, people can slip into addictive behaviors. It'd be very hard to change those addictions, whether it be pornography or spending money recklessly or gambling or alcohol or drugs or work or fitness, whatever it might be. You know, people can be addicted to those things. And I'm not a psychologist, but there is a certain psychological element that we always have to pay attention to there. But I do know that with God's grace, we can remedy things and he can set us free. And the Sacrament of Confession is very, very helpful there.
That's Father Rocky here on Relevant Radio. You're listening to Trending with Timory. He's our executive director of Relevant Radio. And we're walking through his book, The 12 Rules That He Gives to Live Your Life. It's marriage insurance. Mm-hmm. Now, the 11th rule, we don't have time to go through all of them, is to pray together every day. If you haven't started this, it's time to. How do you get started if this is something new to a relationship?
All right. You always have to respect people's private space in terms of religion and soul and all that. So the husband is not the wife's spiritual director and the wife is not the husband's spiritual director. You always retain that independent sphere of your soul. However, prayer together is very helpful. It could be something very simple, like, all right, now we're going to say grace before meals together, and the whole family prays before meals together. Or it could be just the husband and wife said, hey, let's say an Our Father for our kids, all right? And it doesn't have to be dramatic. It doesn't have to be charismatic. It doesn't have to be forced. But some time of prayer that jointly the two are opening their heart to God's grace, I think is very important. I remember preparing a couple, 10 years ago or so. I'm really proud of them because life's not easy when you have a lot of kids and you live in an expensive area and all the rest. And I was telling them that you should at least pray. You should pray together every day, at least an Our Father. And she said, at least an hour? I said, no. I said, at least an Our Father. Oh, okay. We can do that.
That's doable.
That's doable. At least an hour?
One of those rules.
At least an Our Father.
One of those rules we didn't get to walk through, but I think is one of the most important, is going to bed at the same time. Mm-hmm. You talk about how important this is for being able to talk those last few minutes of the day.
Right.
It's a perfect time to pray together and do that night prayer and examination of conscience, of course, separately, but side by side, as a means to easily hit that target every day of praying together. That's Father Rocky here on Trending with Tim Ray. We'll post links in the podcast notes to his book, Marriage Insurance, 12 Rules to Live By. We'll be right back here on Relevant Radio.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
You're listening to our weekly Marriage Hour here on Trending, and today we are talking about St. John Paul the Great on his feast day. Now, if you missed it earlier, I played him singing the Pater Noster, that's the Latin for Our Father, during a Mass back in 1982 at St. Peter's. I posted on my Instagram as well if you missed that. But first, a comment about one of Father Rocky's books. It's our responsibility as Catholics, yours and mine, to be involved in the culture and the governance of our nation and communities. Our church, family, and the most vulnerable members of society depend on it. Father Rocky's new ebook, Vote Your Conscience, will help you learn how to form your conscience around truth, beauty, goodness, and Catholic teaching, and then to use your well-formed conscience in all areas of your life to make moral choices in voting, raising your family, and evangelizing those around you. Father Rocky's ebook is free. All you have to do is go to relevantradio.com/vote or sign up on the Relevant Radio app. Get your free copy and invite others to as well. Again, I mentioned that it's a feast day of St. John Paul II. And in his work, Theology of the Body, which was given over the course of a number of years, in his general audiences in St. Peter's Square, he taught a lot about becoming a gift of self. The idea is written even very deeply into the male and female dimension of the human person. We know that we have two narratives of the creation story that I often speak of. Genesis chapter 1 creates Adam and Eve at the same time in God's image and likeness. Now, God thinks, in case you don't get it, people, he tells us the story twice about our human anthropology. In Genesis chapter 2, God creates Adam first. And Adam's looking around at all the plants and the animals, and he notices the generative capabilities of all. He notices the male and female dimension of the animals, that even the plants can continue their species. And he realizes that he's alone. God says it's not good that man should be alone, and he creates Eve. And Adam has this aha moment as he sees Eve, and he goes, ah, finally, bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. We have to remember that Adam and Eve are but naked in the garden. It wasn't scandalizing, uncomfortable. It was actually revealing from the perspective of the physical dimension of the body was made to be a complement to one another. But that physical complementarity, like a key in a lock, actually pointed to something even greater. The spiritual complementarity as well. That who I am as a person is made to be a gift to another human being. This is a message of our Lord Jesus Christ shown on the cross. That gift of Jesus is bloody, bruised, and beaten. We see life-giving, self-giving love lived out on the cross each day. This is why we as Catholics make the sign of the cross over and over again on our bodies before we pray and after. It's not our knock-knock to God. It's not us saying, hello, God, are you there? It's us acknowledging the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, the communion of persons, and the sacrifice Christ made, showing what it means to be like him and how to live in his image and likeness. And again, it's bloody, bruised, and beaten. And so that simple understanding from Genesis chapter 1 and 2 that we're made in his image and likeness and we're made for complementarity with one another reveals this idea that St. John Paul II points to, that in the garden, that original solitude of Adam really reveals a huge revelation to each and every single one of us. That we discover, as John Paul II says, our own humanity through the communion of persons. He says we become an image of God not so much in the moment of solitude as in the moment of communion. But this solitude ultimately points to that greater gift of self, that my life will be fully understood and discovered if I give myself as a gift. Now, this was more easily understood before the fall. Again, there was this comfort even in our nudity prior to the fall in Genesis chapter 3. In fact, The church, and specifically John Paul II, walks through these original states in the garden, such as original justice, how the relationship between Adam and Eve, and also each of them individually before God, was clear. Our vertical and horizontal relationships were put in proper context. Those vertical relationships between us and God were understood, and because that relationship was so clear, the horizontal relationship between human persons was also clear. Because of that, there was this original state of justice, a harmony that existed between male and female and in friendships. This humanity before God that actually understood that humanity, that humility, to be of the earth, to be a creature created by God. This was what was so clearly understood in these original states prior to the fall. This also points to what John Paul II refers to as original unity. He talks about how the human person had two different incarnations, one as male and one as female. Two ways in which the same human being can be created in the image of God, but one is feminine and one is masculine. This is what the incredible gift of theology of the body helps us to understand in a more profound way. The anthropology of the human person as male and female from the very beginning. Men and women reveal, as St. John Paul II says, I quote, two complementary ways of being conscious of the meaning of the body. What does that mean to be conscious of the meaning of the body in two complementary ways? It means men and women are different. And we become aware of ourselves, body and soul, each in a unique way, but also in knowing one another. By our communication, our actions, our discovery of one another through friendship, the family. In fact, St. John Paul II looks to the creation narrative in Genesis chapter 1 and 2 and talks about how there we show that femininity in some way finds itself, I quote, before masculinity, while masculinity confirms itself through femininity. Close quote. What would happen if we got rid of one of the two sexes? I remember some years ago speaking on a university campus, and I asked the college students, what if we got rid of all the women? Gentlemen, what would life be like? There was some booing, discomfort, and there was this clear acknowledgement that something would be missing. Not just that women would be missing, but something to be discovered and known within man himself would be missing. And sure, the feminist movement, the radical feminist movement, may try to say there are no differences between men and women, or they may still be dancing to that tune, I can do anything, you can do better. But in reality, we've seen that trying to reject men or say there are no differences has ultimately led to a decline in overall female happiness. And so this is why those original states of unity, justice, and nakedness in the garden, and even solitude, reveal so much about the human person. It points to, ultimately, the spousal meaning of the body, as St. John Paul II discusses. And the spousal meaning of the body helps us to understand the resounding yes to chastity. That sexual integrity has to do with saying yes to my sexuality, not by saying no. That means fidelity within marriage, turning away from or never turning toward pornography, is actually me saying yes to who I am and being created to be a gift to someone else within my marriage. That is my spouse. Or if you're dating or single, you acknowledge that yes, sexuality is there. The desire and urge is present. That it's written into our human body for the sexual complementarity with someone of the opposite sex, because that's the only way it actually works. But with that knowledge, we also recognize that this sexuality is made to be a gift. And so that clarifies any confusion within the culture, that when we deviate from that gift that's given within marriage, in fact, we see tremendous unhappiness, health consequences within the LGBTQ community, those increase in sexually transmitted diseases, AIDS, the AIDS epidemic. The social sciences affirm that when we take sex out of marriage, babies out of sex, we create great confusion about, ultimately, how we feel about ourselves. Anxiety and depression settles in. This is why the spousal meaning of the body, written into our human nature from the very beginning, is so important. We need to return back to the Garden of Eden, remembering the great gift God gave us in creating us as male and female, acknowledging that from solitude, God called us into communion, and that if we leave ourselves in the state of solitude, it breeds resentment within a marriage, within a culture where we tend to isolate ourselves from others. We've never been so connected via social media and phones, yet at the same time, so disconnected from a basic human understanding of one another. There's a reason that Adam looks at Eve and says, ah, finally, bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. There's this discovery that I'm made to be a gift and I'm created to be with other people and give myself to other people. Again, that material reality points to an even greater spiritual reality that Christ shows us virginally on the cross. You and I were made for life-giving, self-giving love. And when we understand that, our relationships tend to fall back into place. We can regain, through the grace of the sacraments, this proper understanding of the original sense of justice that God had, where when we can make right our vertical relationship of us being a creature before God the Creator, and that He had a created purpose for you and I, that's when we start to better understand these other relationships around us. This is why we were talking just a little bit ago with Father Rocky about how important monthly confession is within marriage. Because when monthly confession is present, there's this making right with God so that we can make right with our neighbor, those known and unknown. And so we regain that sense of unity yet again in our relationships. We may not be able to go back to the garden, but we can go back through the grace of the sacraments of the church to those original states of unity that God created us for, ultimately to be with Him. God recognized that we fell, and there's so much confusion now about who we are and what we're made for, but He gave us the sacraments, baptism making us the children of Him, the Eucharist literally giving us His body in order to be united with Him, showing us, I will give you the greatest gift. Just give yourself to me, and I will give you those graces to live out the vocation of marriage, to live out those single years, to live out your calling to the religious life. And when you fall, which He knows we all do, I will reunite you to me, He says, through a confession. This is what's so profound about Christ coming and giving us that sacrifice on the cross. He gives us the church is born with efficacious graces that truly transform our entire lives to bring us back to that original unity with God, back into our marriages, back into our relationships. This is the path to happiness, and this is the great legacy that St. John Paul the Great gave us that will truly transform our lives if we take it seriously, understanding that biblical anthropology of who we are and what we're made for.